Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Now for the interview, we have a special guest that's written quite a few books that caught my eye, Deadliest Woman, 1926. There's been quite a few. And so the author, historian David Kolchek, thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
What got you into this world of writing, you know, true crime and kind of the stories that you write?
Well, I started out writing fiction. I was really lucky. I was about in my 30s. And I wrote a bunch of short stories, and I sent them to different magazines, and they all got accepted. And, you know, there's always, they say, oh, expect to be rejected 100 times before you're ever published. And the first three things I sent out to people got published. So I started writing for a weekly paper from the Seattle Times, and, you know, just kind of started doing the freelance writing thing. And I was already into having a history degree from the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And I moved to California, and I started digging up other history books. And it was all about the same thing. And I started looking into crime books. It's all the same characters all the time. And I thought, well, there's got to be more than this. And so I started digging things up and found a lot of good books on Linden Press, Craven Street, Quill Driver. It's their subsidies. It's my first four books are on. And they had these great books of California crime history and stuff. I sent them a proposition, you know, a proposal proposition. and they said, yeah. And so, you know, they put out four books of mine. They're all California-based. California Justice, Shootouts, Lynchings, and Assassinations was my first book. And Death in California is my second, California Fruit Flakes and Nuts. I tried to get away from the crime thing, and didn't work. So the next book was California's Deadliest Women, and Dangerous Dames and Murderous Moms. That book, I got PTSD by the time I finished it. It took me a good year to get over writing that book. There's not one happy story. My other books, there's always like at least a humorous, you know, a humorous homicide, you know, or at least kind of, you know, something really stupid, almost Three Stooges-like. But in California's Deadliest Women, these are 36 women that killed cold-blooded, just cold-blooded. And, yeah, there's nothing nice, nothing to chuckle about.
Oh, I'm laughing. Well,
yeah.
Well, the 36 woman that killed cold-blooded, were they serial killer or were they just like killing a lover type thing or what?
It's all a mixed bag. I picked out women that did it on their own that weren't encouraged by a male or by a group or anything. These are individual murders. And, it's cold.
Now, do you find that did those women kill violently, like with a knife or a gun, or was it like a quiet poisoning?
You know, oddly enough, poisoning didn't really happen that much. I mean, it happened, but those aren't the stories I went after. For every story I wrote about, there's probably five that I didn't. Because it didn't, you know, maybe it was poisoning, maybe it wasn't as interesting, you know. There's a lot of murders that just aren't interesting enough to write a whole chapter about.
Well, what is it that you find interesting? Like, what part are you looking for in a murder when you write?
Something unique about it, whether it was a multiple one. Because, you know, people say, like, all these mass murders that are happening now. It's like, no, they were always happening. There was probably a good dozen in 1926 alone.
Hmm.
There has to be something, just like a lot of times the most interesting murders are the ones where it's just a normal person that all of a sudden is murdered or becomes a murderer, you know. It's not like this person was this criminal the whole time. And one odd thing I found is that after wars, especially in 1926, I wrote 1926 Homicide in America, there's just all these crazy killings that happened in 1926. I wrote that book because while I was doing research on all my other books, 1926 kept on popping up. But unless it happened in California, which is what I was writing about, I didn't include them. But I made notes of it and put it away, so I finally got enough to have a whole book about the crime. I didn't even use gangsters or anything like that. These are just like everyday horrible things that happen.
I could sort of read the forego about that, and it sort of mentions how you're kind of suggesting that everything just went all loose, like they were just like it was just crazy time in 26. You know, the partying and the drugs and the alcohol and killing. What was so different about 1926 that made the whole society go, like, nuts?
Well, it was a good 6 to 7 years from the end of World War One. In World War One, everybody signed up and went out there. And, people came back wounded, crippled, mentally unstable. And everybody had a friend who died. Every family had somebody who died. So everybody saw death. And then the flu pandemic of 1919, the Spanish flu, they called it, that killed even more people. So everyone saw death. Everyone had experienced death. It doesn't matter what social order you were in. You experienced death. And so everybody just kind of said, screw it, you know. So why do I have to wear a corset? Why do I have to, you know, men were like, why do I have to do this or that, you know? Cars became more numerous, and so people had, you know, more access to mobility, the radio, films. The silent films were at their peak at that time. They were, you know, if you watch a silent movie from 1926, it's like a work of art. They had it down. And the films were about people, you know, the It Girl, Clara Bow. I saw that film in a college class I had about 10 years ago. And there are all these young kids in the class, you know, there's like 300 people in this class, and they all just flipped just like they did in 1925 when it came out. It still rings with the young people, a 100-year-old movie. So all these things were happening. There was kind of an awareness. Part of it, too, is that the radio, that's the first year that network radio came out. Before, it was all just independent stations, and that's when the National Broadcasting Company happened. They did transcontinental simulcast radio. So for once in the entire history of the world, everyone was listening to the same thing.
Beginning of the end.
And yeah, it's you know, almost like, you know, I don't know how old you are, but when the guys landed on the moon, I was like 10 years old, and it was kind of like everyone just kind of felt like, yeah, beginning of the end, man. You know, it's like, what does this mean, you know? What could happen here, you know?
Yeah. Well, now we've got people saying it never happened, so.
Yeah. But also, another thing I've noticed in some of the more recent books I'm writing is that after wars, like after World War One, after World War Two, and even now, veterans kill themselves, or they have just slow death from the injuries that they had, and that was really bad after World War Two. My father's cousin, I just found this out a few years ago, was like in the Bataan Death March or something, and was a prisoner of war, and he died like in 1954. Three of his wounds, you know, from having malaria and everything. And people were jumping out of, like, hotel windows, committing suicide all over the place. I'm talking 1946, 47, 48. You know, people just think, oh, man, they went back to work. And it's like, no, people were really destroyed.
Yeah, so it really hurts people mentally, and it throws society into kind of a little bit of a loop there, I guess.
Yeah, and also a lot of these people, you know, they were in war, and so shooting somebody or killing somebody, they've done it, you know. They already did it. So it's not like something they have to, you know, the urge is there.
So now, were the type of murders in 1926, for instance, were they rather violent and cold and anonymous murders, or was it what was different about them?
They were really violent. They were really violent murders. That's another thing that struck me. Even in my books, those stories that happened in California were in 1926. One of the weirdest ones that happened on May 30th, 1926 in Provo, Utah. And this four-year-old kid, his name was James Brand, he was playing with his three-year-old brother in the backyard of the grandma's house. And it was like a Sunday afternoon, you know, his parents were young and stuff. And the kid picked up a hatchet that was laying around the yard and beat his brother over the head with it over a dozen times. An adult saw what happened. And so, you know, what do you do when a four-year-old's an axe murderer? Do you know?
No.
They didn't know. They didn't know. You know, you can't arrest them. They took them to a hospital, what they knew about psychology and stuff, but, you know, they couldn't do anything. And the kid died of epilepsy like about 3 years later at seven. They said that their neighbors, when he was just a couple of months before that happened, he was snooping around a neighbor's yard, and a neighbor caught him and said, you know, I'm going to cut off your head, and had a hatchet. And, you know, people used to just kill their own chickens in their yard back then. And he dragged the kid over to the butcher block just to scare him. But they said after that, the kid was never the same, and he started hurting animals and getting in fights with playmates and stuff. But, man, what do you do?
Well, you know, kill him.
Well, yeah, I don't, you know, that's, I mean, that's yeah, but, said, yeah. You know, it did happen, so.
So this violent crime period of a year, it really only happened a year. How does society kind of grow out of that so quickly?
You know, I don't know the answer to that, because it did fall off. I mean, still there was some, you know, a lot of murders and stuff afterwards and before, but 1926 just had that thing where somebody just goes nuts and kills everyone in the house, and, you know, or just, you know, a farmer that you know, kills his family. It's like, oh, so I really don't know. You know, I'm a historian, so I'm not an anthropologist, or, you know.
No, it's kind of, you know, just following it and writing about it. I'm just wondering if you noticed something that, else going on in the world or U.S. that would make it like peak in that one year and then all of a sudden jump back because it
well, it was also boom times, and in most of the cities in America, so 1926, everyone had a good paying job. They built, Seattle was built. The main buildings were in the 20s. Almost every city, there is. The technology caught up with everything. We were doing good. Hmm. And so everyone had money, and, alcohol was illegal, and everyone was listening to the same songs on the radio. And,
So how did policing handle that sort of thing? Was there a lot of arrests? Were there a lot of, what ended up happening?
Well, yeah, of course they got arrested. And most of the time, police, during that time, the police departments, those jobs went to, Cousin Joe can't get a job, Or, Schmitty just got out of the army. He needs a job. Okay, just become a cop. Here's your badge. Here's your gun. Here's your club. They had no training. And there was a crime here in Sacramento in, 1936 where this guy started shooting people at the Crocker Art Museum, And there was only, two police officers on duty. And it happened at 2 in the afternoon. And at that time, Sacramento's population was probably 100,000. it's not like it was a, sleepy village, So, the police weren't, they would beat the crap out of people in interrogation rooms. That's how they confession. That's how they worked back then. That's how it worked,
So when you look at the big picture of murder, now do you find that the current trend now of people being really into murder and true crime and that whole thing, was that happening back then as well? Like, were people into it like they are now? Is there
Look at Agatha Christie, the Earl Garner Stanley wrote Perry Mason books. People love that stuff. They've always loved that stuff. And, it's only been a couple hundred years since everybody's been reading and writing. it's only been 50 years since females have really gotten their foot in the door being writers. And same thing with writers in general. Pretty much all the ones before 1920s were rich guys who didn't have to work, Yeah. And then that kind of ended after World War One, and especially after World War II.
What an interesting subject.
Well, thanks.
When you were writing about the California little series, with Deadliest Woman and things like that, how did you pick the ones that you decided to put in the book?
Oh, thank you. when you see them, you go whoa, I have to write about this, The best times when I'm finding these stories is when I'm looking about some other story. And then I see in the paper, some blurb about this other group crime. So one thing leads to another,
What is one of the weirdest stories of a woman killer?
Of a woman killer? You get me back on that track? I got a great one ready to go. I have this is one of the weirdest stories about California murders, and it's the Mad Killer of 1941, happened in Sacramento. And, old Sacramento is now a big tourist spot. It's made up it's the 1850s and stuff, and it's a state bar. It's actually a nice place, but it's where, you get taffy and, tourist traps and stuff. But until 1965, for over 100 years, that was where you'd go to score heroin and, do some illegal gambling and that kind of thing.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So there's always a lot of cowboys, you know, looking for work and stuff in that area, or that'd be where they'd come into town, you know, because Sacramento's in the Sacramento Valley. We're 80 miles from San Francisco, but there's a lot of farmland, ranch land around us. So these guys start disappearing, and they also start finding them beat to death. Like, they thought, like, a gorilla would have killed this guy like that. So they find, like, three guys like this. They find one who's still alive. They don't get much information. All these guys are gay cowboys, gay ranch hands. And so the counties around start, you know, they all start looking around for all their unidentified, their John Does. So they kind of cleared off their boards with it, but there was at least five people. Three of them were John Does. Two of them actually had names that were killed by this guy. And he would basically, they all had the same story, the ones that lived long enough, that they were drinking with this guy, like under the bridge, by the railroad bridge and stuff. He offered them a ride back to their ranch or wherever, and he took them out somewhere else and like, beat them. And so, you know, the papers were on uproar, and then World War II happens, Pearl Harbor happens. These all happen like in October, November, then December 7th, they all stopped. So it made people think that this guy was military, because they all said that he drove like this, you know, drab green, like kind of older vehicle. And, you know, there's two Air Force bases on north and south of Sacramento, especially back then. And, so, yeah, they disappeared. The crime stopped happening. But they start happening again in 1956. And this is just where I think is just the craziest thing. I discovered this while I was doing the research for this book about Sacramento. It's Forgotten Sacramento Murders, 1940 to 1946. So in 1957, five guys that kind of fit the same category, same M.O., they were, let's say, on the curious side of life, right? And, like, with their faces beat in, and just somebody with abnormal strength killing them all. Two of them were military guys, too. And then the third, I added on because it happened all at the same time, and the injuries were the same, but there was one woman that he killed. One of these guys that he killed was left on the side of the road. It was a country road back or then. Now it's like there's, you know, a bank in that, you know, area, and, you know, workout places and restaurants. And he was left naked laying on the side of the road, almost decapitated. So, and everything, same thing, everybody else saw a military vehicle in the scene before it happened. And then they stopped again. What could have happened is that this guy was in the military and he got transferred back to Sacramento, or he was put in prison for something other than, you know, these murders that he did. And it would have served about 18 years, and that's about normal back in those days to serve for murder. So no one knows what happened, and no one's ever connected these murders in 1957-58 with the mad killer, except me.
Hmm.
Well, I hope I'm right.
Well, and so what do you think was the motive then when you get to that? Like, was he out for... was this some sort of sexual assault as well?
No,
like, was there more to
you
it?
You know, they dance around that, especially in the papers in those times, you know. And but there was no hint of sexual assaults with these. He might have, like, you know, gay people. He might have hated himself for being gay. I mean, who knows? He might have just liked to kill people. And, you know, the people he was killing were, especially in the 41, they were the outskirts of society, you know. They were cowboys. And, I mean, they still had cowboys back then. And farm workers, and, you know, that's low on the social pole, you know. Yeah. At first, the police didn't pay much attention to it until... You know, yeah, till like two of them happened. And it's just, there weren't a lot of murders in Sacramento in the old days. So, there isn't even now in a way, but, you know, it's hard digging up Sacramento murders that are interesting enough to write about.
And so the second thing, series of murders happened, and then they stopped again. So,
yeah. Wow. Maybe he got caught for some other crime in the military and they sent him somewhere else. They had the bases here, McAllen and Mather. Mather was like a navigation school, and they also had bombers there and stuff. But McAllen was like an armory. That's where they had bombs for World War II, and Doolittle's Raiders were fitted out there and all that, you know. So that was a major, major base. Thousands of men that they're coming and going all the time. You know, the Golden State murderer guy, right? That happened right here in Sacramento, actually in the neighborhood I live in. Everyone thought that he was like a Air Force, Special Forces guy, because he, you know, would disappear, and he was like such a, you know, he would. There were cops that were like almost standing on him, and he was like hiding in bushes and stuff. And they'd see the evidence later, you know, that he was under there. And that's why everyone thought it was like a guy from Mather, which is the closer base to where the crimes happened. And it turned out to be this guy. Well, he hasn't been convicted yet, so.
Well, yeah. I think it's they're pretty solid cases for DNA and
everything. Yeah, a friend of mine used to deliver his newspapers.
Do you ever wonder how someone like that can do so many killings and attacks and then just stop and then live a normal life for years?
Yeah, isn't that weird? You know, and that's why everyone thought that he was like a, you know, military super, you know, sealed ranger guy or something. I mean, you know, I've been told by people in this neighborhood that when it was Hefty Coys out, they were trying to fit into the neighborhood. They were like wearing wigs and bad beards and stuff.
Well, you know, it's just crazy. I just wonder, does that kind of almost prove that a lot of the profiling done on these killers are not so accurate, and they're kind of way off base in a lot of cases?
Yeah. Well, wasn't the Green River Killer up there in Seattle? Wasn't the case too? Wasn't it just turned out to be some guy they had no idea, didn't fit it?
Yeah.
And same thing with the BCK guy in Kansas City.
Yeah, and that's sort of what I mean. There's so many that they get it by accident, you know, a parking ticket or something weird, and then they catch them. But it's not from the profiling, and I just wonder if that's just a whole lot of money for nothing.
Well, I think a lot of things are, you know. I mean, there's a whole lot of money for nothing all over the place, you know.
Yeah, big business. Well, that's really interesting. But do you have any influences? Is there other writers or programs or things that influence you on how you write?
J. Robert Nash is the guy that he wrote. He wrote a dozen. Murder America. He did the Blood Letters and Bad Men. He got famous for it. It came out in about 72, and it was just like the first history of, like, letters and bad men, you know. And it gave me inspired me. All of his books did. And he also does it in a kind of an order that I kind of do, too, where I hate when I'm reading a story, and I'm like three paragraphs down, and I still haven't found out what town it's in, you know. And it's like, tell me where it is, you know. It's like, set the story up, you know, the date, the address, if I have it. And who was involved. And I just kind of do that just so, you know, that's, I don't know, J. Robert Nash, I guess I have to hand it to him. He's still alive. He's about 90 years old. He's a Chicago guy. He supposedly has the largest crime library in the world. So
had the years.
Yeah. And Kurt Vonnegut's my other influence, just his writing style, you know. I just love it, because, well, most of my stories, people say this, you read them and it sounds more like somebody's telling you the story, you know. And because you know, a lot of history is written so dry, you know, and they have to tell a story, and having a history degree and things, you know, I believe that you have to write these things. You have to be a good writer to be a historian. That's what I'm trying to say. You know? Yeah.
So you have to narrate the way. You have to
make it fun for somebody to read. You know, unless you're writing a textbook, you know, there's no reason to have, you know, footnotes and all that stuff. I don't want to bog things down with, you know, there's this one book I reviewed about, and the guy got really mad at me, but basically he went off on a tangent, many pages of something that had nothing to do with the story, and you know, I pointed that out. But you know, you have to I would rather write a shorter story than to go on and pad something.
I do the same when I get around.
Yeah, it's like, you know, well, people have short attention spans. I have a short attention span. And you know, I kind of write about the crimes. I don't write about the court drama that happened in, not as much as I do about the crime exactly, unless it's something really crazy happened in the courts. But, you know, I find the courts kind of boring too most of the time.
So where do you plan on going with writing these books? Do you keep, where do you head next for writing?
I'm a geezer now. So I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. You know, I seem to have found my genre, and I'm pretty happy with it. You know, I've been getting a lot of calls from radio stations and podcasts and things, and I'm kind of turned into the old man of true crime, you know, especially for California. So, you know, at this point in my life, I'll take it, you know. It's like, I don't know how many more years I got left. I'm glad I had the honor to really my first four. It's like when you release your first book, people are like, that's great. You release your second one, and people are like, well, that's cool. And you release the third one, they're like, yeah. Really? Another one?
What do you hope people get out of your books when they read them?
I hope that they realize that things have gotten a lot better. You know, there's always all this negative yib-yab about, oh, crime's so much worse and all that. It's not. And they catch people nowadays. In the old days, you literally could get away with murder. Just because the police didn't really investigate. The police would get paid off. People didn't care. People didn't have IDs. Yeah, things are better now. You know, the police are more educated. They're better trained. You know, we can go in a whole debate about that. We have radios now. 1926, they didn't have radios in police cars. You know, just think of that's just one simple thing right there.
Well, just the whole idea of forensics too, right? And even fingerprints were so primitive. Mm-hmm. And look at back even just in the late 1800s when they just would wash down the crime scenes, you know.
Right. You know, it's yeah, they much better, much more professional, and there's less crime than there is. You know, also back then, too, people weren't as educated until after World War II. There was a lot of people that were illiterate and had no educations at all, and that improved a lot after World War II. But, you know, there's some stories I got in 1926, you know, I got in the Dakotas, Montana, the old northern part, that was all full of blood and Czech and Poles, Swedes that came over there. And like everyone spoke, like in North Dakota, everyone spoke German. The only people that spoke English were cops and school teachers. And, you know, everyone spoke German among themselves. And there were families. I read about this one in 1926 where they had like 18 kids, you know, 10 boys and 8 girls, and the girls were all married off by the time they were 14. And the boys, they would get maybe 2 years of school, and then they'd go out work out in the fields. They didn't even read their own language. And they were, once they were 16 or so, they would even, their parents would lease them out to other farmers to help with their work, and their parents would sit back and just collect the money. And that was an agreement until they were 25 years old. What happened with this one kid is that the parents sold him basically to this couple away from home, you know, and away from all of his family and everything. And the kid was so stupid, he thought, you know, oh, these people, that was like a young couple. They were, you know, doing a scientific farm, you know. And he killed them both, and then just to steal their car. He just thought, hey, that's the way I can get the car. I'll just kill them. So he did that, and then he drove home, like, hey, look at the car I got. I mean, you know, just not a brain in his head.
Now, do you have a website or a place that people can come find your work and find you?
Well, I have a Facebook. It's David Kolchek, criminal or homicide historian. And then I have an Amazon page, too. That's just my name. And it has all my books for sale there. I used to have a blog, and I found that I sold less books if I had if I put stories up.
Yeah. That's all they need, is your blog. Yeah. David Kolchek. So you could be the Night Stalker.
You know, that was my nickname when I was in seventh grade when that TV show came out. I was the Night Stalker. It's been my nickname and various works and stuff throughout my life. My brother, Kolchek, that was his name too. He was a freshman in college when that came out. So, yeah, the Night Stalker thing for a long time.
Yeah, I remember that, sort of.
Kolchek, too.
Yeah.
Heard a lot of Kolchek.
Well, it's been fun talking to you. I we'd love to have you on again. And
hey, anytime.
This has been fantastic. So we will have your books. We'll have your website, or your actually your Amazon and Facebook page on ours, so people can do one click and pick it up. So, you know, that was it's very good. David Kolchak, thank you for being here.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.